Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hello, friends. This is David from Bothwell in Scotland, and you are listening to the award-winning tennis podcast.
Well, David has made it very awkward there with his introduction by blooming well mentioning the fact that we are now an award-winning tennis podcast. We were all going to take the high road and be very hashtag humble about it all and just, you know, frankly, not mention it. But David has left us with no choice, hasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to leave it at least 4 seconds before I mentioned it.
David, you've done David a solid there.
Yeah, very proud of you.
By starting the smugness ball rolling.
You say that, Catherine. We didn't have to use David's intro today, but, you know, we chose to.
who's the we there, Matt?
That would be me. I loved it when it popped in the inbox.
Magnificent.
Thank you, David, for that wonderful introduction. We know David. He's a long-time listener. Says he started listening to the podcast in 2016 after Andy Murray became world number one, and he hasn't missed an episode since. So that's good going if you started listening because Andy Murray became world number one, because from an Andy Murray point of view, very much downhill since then. But you've stuck with us, David, and here you are introducing a very, very special show for us because, if you'll allow us just a few minutes of indulgence, we would like to talk a bit about the fact that we won the British Podcast Awards Award for the Best Sport Podcast, and David is sitting with that very award right now. I'm not sure he's put it down in the last 4 days. Have you? Has it left your hands, David?
It has, yeah. But I've picked it up a lot of times after I put it down. yes, I have the privilege of the first instalment of custody of the award as we hand it over to one another for a relay to show our various friends and family. Me and my kids, they've all had their photo taken with it. I mean, it is lovely. I mean, it's a beautiful award physically, but I mean, its meaning to us is, certainly for me, is significant, because the British Podcast Awards, they are what they say they are. They are the best of the best in this country, and the whole industry is invested in them and interested in them, and frankly, I was absolutely blown away to be shortlisted for it alongside 4 BBC sport podcasts and little old us, an independent, produced basically by the three of us and several people we work with. But I mean, you know, that felt like something really special. And for it to come after more than a decade of building the thing up, and we laugh about the fact that we never win anything. We've never won anything. And this is kind of the biggest award in the industry. So to be recognised like that really does mean something.
I think it might be the first thing I've ever won. Matt, I bet you did winning things at school.
I won the French prize in year 7.
Cool. Oh. That is exactly what this the wheelhouse that I thought you were going to come in with. Yeah.
How many did you beat?
Well, I suppose everyone in the year who did French.
Good work, Matt.
Mm. Mm. Although year 7, you know, that isn't really the time you want to be peaking.
I remember my brother won the maths marathon in year 7, and because I was a nerd and continue to be a nerd, I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Well, I'm peaking age 50, it seems. So
we are, if it's not clear, folks, we are absolutely chuffed to bits because, you know, as much as, you know, we're not doing this to win awards. I think we would have given up some time ago if we were. That's obviously, you know, it's a nice sort of accoutrement to what we do. Everyone needs external validation sometimes. And it's exactly that. And it really, the recognition really means something to us. And I'm going to do a Matt Roberts and thank the voters that didn't vote.
I was going to say, one thing I didn't have to do after collecting the French prize in year 7 was give an acceptance speech. And I now have newfound sympathy for all those people who have to do it. Because I blanked and thanked voters in a judged category.
What happens when you win a thing is you get ushered, well, at this particular award show, is you get ushered to a backstage room that only winners get to see, and you're sort of held hostage in an interview situation. We were interviewed by Lad Baby, or one half of Lad Baby, which is a sort of novelty act that have had 5 Christmas number ones in a row in the UK. Look them up if you want to know more. If you don't, that's fine. We had one microphone between us, and I was clutching it in the middle, so I sort of just passed the buck and threw the questions over to Matt and David, and it was all weird. But yeah, although there weren't officially voters, it's pretty obvious to say that without all you listening and supporting us and friends of the Tennis Podcast and contributors over the years, we wouldn't be sitting here being smug in the way that we are. So we're very grateful, and we're grateful for if you're listening now, then you haven't tuned out, but thank you for sticking with these 6 minutes of gloating. And it's a very well timed award, isn't it? Because it has come at a time when we can spare 6 minutes on the pod for a bit of gloating, because I'm finding tennis tough at the moment to follow. I'm forcing myself for my art. You're welcome, listeners, but I'm finding it tough.
Well, they're not making it easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, tennis is making it tough.
They're making it tougher. Am I right, Matt? They're making it tougher than it's ever been. And I think because of this weird start and end time to these tournaments, I think only on the men's side, but they're all finishing midweek. And
the fact that it's only on the men's side, now that we have a combined event, that actually makes it tougher that it's only on one side.
Yeah, because Beijing is happening for both the women and the men. They're playing in literally the same venue. For the women, it's a 1,000 event. For the men, it's a 500 event. And they're running on totally different timetables. We're at the semi-final stage of the men's tournament, and only in the sort of second, third round stage of the women's tournament. On the tennis apps, you know, you put up the order of play, but because they're separate events, the order of play is sort of incomplete. It only has the men's section on the men's bit, and the women's only has the women. It's not all combined. It's all very confusing. It's for a good reason, I think, that the men's events are so out of sync. They pushed the start times of those events back a couple of weeks ago so that players were encouraged to play Davis Cup, and that they would then have more time to be able to get to their next tournament. So I think it was a good thing, really, that they did. And, you know, it's just a problem of the tennis calendar that it's so cluttered that that is the sort of measure that they have to go to. And it has thrown me out of sync. It's thrown all of us out of sync because, yeah, yet again, we're in a position on the Monday podcast where we can only sort of cover half tournaments because we've got results from the women's tournaments, but we don't fully have the results from the men's tournaments in Beijing and Astana yet. And yeah, it's very confusing.
When will it get back in sync? Because you need a fallow week to be able to sort of have 4 days off to reset, and tennis doesn't have fallow weeks. So we'll be now out of sync for the rest of time in men's tennis?
No, enter Shanghai. Which
right oh
oh well oh. done Shanghai
which is a 12-day Masters 1000 event which we've got used to throughout the year. The difference is Shanghai is only for the men, and I think that tournament is really going to drag. There's going to be a lot of days where you're looking at the schedule thinking, where are all the brilliant matches that we're so used to Masters 1000 events being about? You know, there's a very strong field. There will be great matches and stories from that tournament, but I don't think it's going to flow in quite the way that we like those events to flow.
Yeah, I think Shanghai could be a tough scene for a few days. We'll come on to that a little bit later on. Let's start with some results. So these are tournaments that have ended. They have ended on the weekend, at a time when you would expect a tennis tournament to end. And they have been won in Ningbo by Ons Jabeur and in Tokyo by Veronika Kudermetova. Let's start in Ningbo with Jabeur. 6-2, 6-1 for her over Diana Schneider in the final. See, she's good. She's good, Diana Schneider.
Yeah, who are you pulling for, Catherine? This is something I really wanted to know. I mean, obviously, we try to report objectively, but we all obviously have our favourites to some degree. And you love both of them.
Yes, I do. I do. And Diana, I really was taken by Diana Schneider at the Australian Open this year. And I went all Nicholas Jarry with her, you know, just sort of every time her name would pop up going, she's good, she is. But I don't know why she's not having results, but she is good.
Fun player.
She is a fun player. She's a lefty. She's interesting. She does things with the ball that I'm not quite expecting. I think she's a bit quirky. I think she carves her own path in the world and on the tennis court, as evidenced by her bandana situation, which I think is fabulous. They're custom-made bandanas, and I was reading an article about her earlier on the WTA website about how she got quite a lot of stick from, you know, she's only 19, from sort of girls at college and at school for her bandana look. It's sort of not being the right aesthetic, and her parents encouraged her to just, you know, do your own thing, do things your way.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, it's really cool. And she wore it because she's very fair-skinned, and her parents were worried about her in the sun, but she found it difficult to do her ball toss with a cap or a visor on, which is something I'm surprised isn't more of an issue. At my incredibly low level of tennis, I've always found the ball toss an issue with a cap or a visor on. Anyway, so she found the bandana solution, and it is working a treat for her.
When I went out to watch her in US Open qualifying a month or so ago, she had two team members there, her coach and someone else of a similar age to Schneider, and she was also wearing a bandana on the sidelines. So it's like a team uniform. I really enjoyed that.
I love it. I really love it. Yeah, and she's got this big lefty game. I can't really think of an equivalent. It's not Kvitova. She is a big hitter like Kvitova, but it's not a flat hit like Kvitova. She's got quite a lot of shape on that forehand. It's quite a different shot. Movement definitely her relative weakness at the moment, but I don't think it's an absolute weakness to be exploited, and I think it's improving all the time. The story, of course, about her when she had that run at the Australian Open is whether she would turn pro at the time, because she was a college player playing for the North Carolina
State.
Somethings?
North Carolina State.
Is there not an animal associated with North Carolina State? Maybe. The North Carolina Squirrels.
The NFL team of the Panthers.
They're the Wolf Pack.
Wolves, yes. They're the Wolves. Mm. Yes. Mm. Yes, so she was still playing for them and she had the dilemma about whether to go pro and collect the paycheck from the Australian Open or whether to continue in college. And she completed the tennis season in college and she was... an amateur player right up until Roland Garros, completed the NCAA championships and went straight from there to play Roland Garros, where I think she won the first round. She said she had she felt a loyalty to the team, having committed to them for the year, but B, as a Russian player, she was very aware that sort of having a coaching setup and a training base provided for her was a massive plus in a very difficult landscape. So she stuck with them until Roland Garros and has been pro ever since, and her ranking is now on the climb. So I'm pleased to see one slight area of vindication for my tennis takes. However, it is totally cancelled out by the fact that this is now back-to-back weeks where players that I've been so demoralised about that I've wanted them to take a break from tennis altogether have won titles.
Maybe you're their kind of spark that they needed, Catherine.
Yeah, maybe.
Look,
nobody's happier for either of them than me. Trust me. Maria Sakkari last week and Ons Jabeur this week, but it does seem to have come out of nowhere for both of them. I mean, it really did not feel to me over the last few weeks that Ons Jabeur was on the cusp of things clicking again. It felt to me like she was just sort of struggling on until the end of the season. And I do wonder if the carrot of qualification for the finals is actually proving quite a big motivator for Ons Jabeur just at the moment.
It's interesting, isn't it? Why does it suddenly happen for somebody out of the blue like that? And I mean, we'll come on to talk about Veronika Kudermetova in a similar way, I think, because she'd had a bad time. And you can just get convinced with good reason that a run is going to carry on, because why wouldn't it if it's a bad one or a good one? But for Jabeur, I only saw highlights of the matches she played, but the joy in the shot making seemed back. She seemed to, in a way, certainly in the final, have just gone back to her old self of just playing fun shots. And I mean, she was hitting drop shot return winners, and frankly toying with Schneider at times. And I mean, I would imagine that. Really, the playbook against somebody who hits the ball as hard as Schneider does and is very physical, probably not to just give them the ball in the slot, because they're going to hurt you, and if you don't, then maybe they're not going to be able to cope. It did come across. I mean, it was 6-2, 6-1. It came across pretty much as though she just doesn't come across a player like that very often. And so Jabeur gave her the full box of tricks. I mean, if that's the start of her at least feeling like herself again now, then that's great.
Mm. And she spoke about the importance of this in terms of the fact that it was her first ever hard court title, which for someone who's been at the top of the game for so long and so much of tennis is played on hard courts is kind of staggering. But she said, if I want to get better in Grand Slam finals, I need to be winning more titles and finals generally. And that is something that I've thought about over the last few months or so when we've been talking a lot about the comparisons between Clijsters and Jabeur. You know, Clijsters losing all those Grand Slam finals and Ons Jabeur losing her first few Grand Slam finals. And totally, there is a comparison there, but it's never felt quite right to me. It's never quite scanned for me, that, because Clijsters was winning a lot generally on the tour, and she was legitimately at times the best player in the world, and she was sweeping titles and then unable to do it in the Grand Slam finals themselves. Ons Jabeur has not won that many titles in her career. I think this was maybe only her fifth. you know, which is a good number, but it's absolutely nowhere near the numbers that Clijsters have been racking up. It's not a huge amount that you say, oh, she absolutely should have a Grand Slam title to go with that as well. And if she can get that winning feeling a little bit more regularly, obviously it's always going to be different in a Grand Slam final. The pressure is going to be ramped up. There's work you need to do to deal with those situations themselves. But it can't hurt to just win some more titles generally and know that winning feeling. And I think she realizes that. And, you know, I think a lot of people will maybe look at this and think, well, who did she really beat in this tournament? Yes, I know Diana Schneider is good, and she had some tough wins as well over Podoroska, Zvonareva, Harriet Dart, not Harriet Dart, Diane Parry. I don't know why I said Harriet Dart. You know, so these were, you know, solid wins, but all wins that you would think Ons Jabeur should be winning. But I think that takes away from what you were saying about what a bad place Ons Jabeur has been in recently over the last few months, since Wimbledon, really. She's been struggling on court. There was no guarantee that she would go onto court and beat anyone playing her game. But I think she found her game this week, and that's just really, really important for her to sort of get those good vibes and good feelings back on the court. And I think she found that last week, and she's already won her first match in Beijing this week.
Yeah, it's all coming thick and fast, isn't it? She's already beaten Aislinn Kruger in straight sets in Beijing, and then she plays Marta Kostyuk tomorrow. And I've actually just seen a tweet from Petra Kvitova complaining about how thick and fast it's all coming. She says, far from ideal to finish my match at the China Open at 1 a.m. and then be back on the schedule at not before 5:30 p.m. the next day, when some first round matches had yet to be played. I have always played the sport with huge respect and rarely speak out, but this time I feel strongly. She had beaten Wang Zhiyu, the left-hander Wang Zhiyu, 6-3 in the third, finishing at 1 a.m. Yesterday, and then was back on to play Samsonova sort of a few hours later, who she later lost to. That's a tough scene, isn't it? I don't understand any of the schedule. I don't understand why the matches did the schedule have to be that way? I don't understand any of it. Why is Alcaraz currently playing on not the main court? Why is any of it?
Well put. Yeah, that is unusual for Kvitova to speak out like that. You know, her social media feed does tend to be everything's jolly and everything's lovely. And, well, good for her, actually, if she feels strongly about this. It does seem like a heck of a turnaround. And hopefully she gets some answers. Hopefully we get some answers.
Over in Tokyo, Veronika Kudermetova not only beat Iga Swiatek, but she also went on to win the title, beating Jessica Pegula 7-5, 6-1 in the final. Having just become an award-winning tennis podcaster, I'm really not making myself sound like a very proficient or knowledgeable tennis podcaster today. I don't understand Veronika Kudermetova as a tennis player. She's won two matches since Wimbledon. She does nothing at the Slams. Nothing. She's reliably bad at Slams. And yet, you know, she was, what, first alternate at the WTA Finals last year, sort of low-key, very nearly qualified for that. And here she is winning this title. Yeah, beating Swiatek, beating Pegula, just popping up and looking fantastic every now and then. I saw her run at the Madrid Open earlier this year, ended up losing to Swiatek in the semi-finals and came up very short that day, but had looked brilliant up until then. I don't understand her lack of consistency, but when she's on,
well, she was awesome.
She's a force.
Against Pegula, particularly the force of her shots, she was just taking it on all the time. Must have huge confidence suddenly, having strung a few together, which, as you say, given the run she'd had, I mean, she was that seeded player that when somebody you know is either coming up or like a Venus Williams beater, you say, she's just beaten Veronika Kudermetova, who's what, 10 in the world or so. You kind of think, well, yeah, but she's playing terribly at the moment. She's not a reliable gauge for how good a win is at the moment because she's having a terrible time. So this has really come out of the blue. And the Świątek win is an interesting one because she seems pretty erratic at the moment, I would say. But at the same time, she'd never won a set against her in the five previous meetings. And she just comes out, wins 2 out of 3 there. I think the final, to me, is even more impressive because Pegula is reliable, typically, and is playing good stuff the most of the time. And Kudermetova just kind of knocked her off the court, particularly in that second set.
Mm. Yeah, she's actually got a very good record, Kudermetova, against top 10 players, considering that she's not really a top 10 player herself. She just sort of hovers just outside that mark. She's almost 50-50 when she does play players in the top 10, which for someone of her ranking is really impressive. Like she can cause them a lot of problems. It just shows how good she can be when she's on. But absolutely, she does just seem to disappear at the really big events, the slams. She's got no great record there to speak of, and goes on these runs of not playing too well. Yeah, I was impressed with her in the final, as David said. So many clean return winners in that second set. Just clearly had her timing just on in that match. I think Pegula will be disappointed with the way the first set ended, with I think back-to-back double faults when she was serving to stay in it, and then the resistance did drop off a bit from her. I think we probably should do our usual, this is a weird time of the tennis season. Like,
I thought you were going to say, what does it mean?
Oh, no.
Let's do that as well.
it kind of ties into what does it mean in the...
Yeah.
What it means has to factor in the fact that this is a weird time of the tennis season.
Yeah, and an overarching storyline of the last couple of weeks is players winning titles who don't do a lot of winning generally. You know, Khachanov won a title for the first time in 5 years. Sakkari ended her drought. Kudermetova had lost 4 finals in a row before this. Jabeur, as I said, doesn't win that many titles. And, you know, remember a year ago we were talking about Felix Auger-Aliassime suddenly winning a load of titles in this sort of period of the tennis season, and that has absolutely not carried over. And I don't know, I just feel like all of these hot takes probably need a bit of cold water thrown on them, just because it is this slightly weird time of the tennis season, and trying to draw a lot of meaning from it, I think, in the past has just shown to be, you know, maybe a slightly pointless exercise. People can still do good things and improve and maybe carry it into next year and into the sort of meat of the tennis season. But there's no guarantee, I don't think.
Pegula has already qualified for Cancun. She's one of 5 players already to have qualified. Sabalenka, Świątek, Goff, Rybakina, Pegula. So in the hunt for the last 3 remaining places, really it's most likely a 4-horse race for 3 places. I suppose you could put Madison Keys. I think Madison Keys and Petra Kvitova have an outside chance. But for now, just for the sake of simplicity, we can revisit in a week's time. I'm going to say Vondroušová, Mukova, Jabeur, Sakkari. Now, it certainly feels like Jabeur and Sakkari are the ones on the charge with the bit between their teeth for those last 2 spots. But is Vondroušová and Mukova with the head-to-head? Now, I don't think Mukova is fit. So even if she did qualify, I'd say there's a good chance that she wouldn't be able to play. I think she's withdrawn this week, is that right? And Vondroušová, I don't know whether she's fully fit. She certainly is playing. She lost to Angelina Kalinina in Beijing, and she posted some screenshots of the sort of thing that we know happens and know is an everyday part of tennis players' lives these days, which is social media abuse when players lose, from people that have gambled money on them and lost, essentially. There's other abuse out there as well. There's all flavours of abuse on the internet, but the particular sickness that I'm referring to here and that Vondrousheva was highlighting was that variety of abuse, and it is absolutely vile and out of control, unchecked, and it's all very well saying don't check social media. Well, that's not the world we live in, folks, particularly not for young people. Their lives are on social media, and that's fine. That might not be how we all live our lives, but I don't think it's really possible for young people to live their lives without being on social media. And especially, you know, in an incredibly isolating sport and lifestyle like playing tennis, things that enable you to form connections with people in the world and everything should not have to be discouraged in the way that some people do, you know, just for the sake of keeping yourself sane. It's really, look, we know it's happening, but I do think actually seeing it in the way that she showed it to us is quite powerful, and as distressing as it is, I think it's important that we do see it.
Yeah, I agree. There's a kind of almost victim blaming for people if they're told, oh, don't go on it then. You know, well, no, you shouldn't have to do that. We should
wear a short skirt then, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
just
should be trying to do something about it and call it out. And yeah, I mean, it makes my blood boil whenever I see it. You know, these people with just so little in their lives that they gamble and then go on and abuse somebody because their own choice didn't work out as they wanted. Well, too bad.
But it's also, I don't disagree with you, David, but I mean, gambling addiction is an illness, and a lot of these people sending these messages will be suffering from that illness, will be totally not of sound mind. And look, tennis is not alone in this. I don't think there's a sport on the planet that hasn't got into bed with gambling. But you know, there's blood on the sport's hands, right? In terms of how we've invited gambling forces into the fold.
A lot of hypocrisy out there.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, the sport is taking money from gambling organisations. And then, yeah, their own players are suffering. Yeah. I just, it turns my stomach thinking about it.
And it feels like we're in a stage with tennis addressing this problem in a very similar way to the way that changes to the sport are brought about, which is extremely slow. And, you know, the French Open this year trialed or certainly used something to block a lot of the hate comments that players were getting on social media. And you know, maybe that's something for us to follow up, but my understanding at the time was that was quite well received and quite positive, in the same way that, for example, it was quite well received at the Next Gen Finals years ago that we would have video review or something. And then eventually now, several years later, it's starting to be brought in. It just takes so long for tennis to actually deal with it. And of course, that goes back to the very fractured governance, I think, of the sport. Things do seem to take time unless one of the absolute powers that be just sort of asserts themselves.
Yeah, everything takes a long time unless you're moving a whole Grand Slam 6 months later in the calendar without any authorization.
What day that was.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like, what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription. ATP results. We have a situation where Alexander Zverev won a title in Chengdu and is already in the semi-finals of another tournament. And this has all happened since we last recorded a podcast. And I don't understand how that can be the case. He beat Roman Safiulin in the final of Chengdu. He's going to play Daniil Medvedev in the semi-finals in Beijing.
Six of his seven matches have all gone three sets. So he's been on the court more often than he's not in the last week or so.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, Medvedev's always had his number, hasn't he? But he won their last meeting, Zverev, in Cincinnati when Medvedev didn't look right to me. And on the basis of that performance, I didn't have particularly high hopes for him at the US Open. Little did I know. But yeah, it's a more interesting matchup than it has felt in years gone by, I think, the Zverev Medvedev one. And of course, it comes with a history of aggro, which is a lovely embellishment.
Let's hope they lean back into that. I mean, I am curious to know whether you regard 6-3 set wins out of seven matches played as more why you're going three sets all the time against these people, or that shows some resilience.
The Nishikori question.
Yes. I do think over the course of Zverev's career, he is very much in the Nishikori camp for going way too long in matches that, frankly, he should have cleaned up ages ago, but actually showing quite a bit of grit and not just falling apart to get the wins and then still often being able to come back the next day and get another one. But I do think over the course of his career, he's probably cost himself some serious runs in Grand Slams and other tournaments by doing this.
Yeah, look, I think if you're going three sets with Pavel Kotov in Chengdu, then we can probably question that. But if you're scrapping for a great three set win over Nicholas Jarry, then that's just very, very impressive.
And here we are at Nicholas Jarry. He was one set away from leading this podcast. Honestly, we were like, what's the story here? Other than us winning an award, we were looking for, you know, the second lead. And if Jarry had beaten Zverev to continue his role and make it to the semi-finals, Jarry would have been it. We had a title and everything. But unfortunately, not to be, ended up losing out to Zverev, but still has the title. No one can ever take that away from him, Matt.
Jarry ascending, do you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, he had a great week. He beat Tsitsipas in straight sets, saved three match points against the ascending Arnaldi, actually. He's a player on our radar, isn't he? After he beat Artifis at the US Open and had a fun match against Alcaraz, he did well for Italy in the Davis Cup. So that was a good win for Jarry. And good match today, Zverev, Jarry. I didn't see much of the first set, which I think Jarry only won 8 points in that set, so there wasn't much to see anyway. But then sets two and three were very high quality. And David's right. Like, I do think there is a very impressive grit to Zverev in these matches. As much as you might think, you know, he should be winning a lot of these more easily, and I do think that. I trust him physically to be able to keep going, and he's just so hard to put away for other players. Like he digs deep in those deciding sets and does have a very impressive record.
In all seriousness, Matt, what is Jarry's ceiling? He's I think just inside the top 20 now, or hovering around the top 20. Basically a top 20 player now. Just is that it? What's his potential, honestly?
Honestly, I think around 15 in the world. Like, I don't really see him as a top 10 player. He does, game style-wise, he reminds me of when Kevin Anderson was at his best in that 2 or 3 year period, in that it's all quite methodical and there's very good technique, and if he's playing well, it's going to be good, you know, because things are working. But I don't sense that much sort of ability to really subtly adapt, or that much variety. His movement is not his best attribute. But at the moment, he's just in some pretty good form. And I like his approach. He comes at you. He likes coming forward. He hits a big ball. He's got some nice hands up at the net. He's played well on all surfaces this year. Hard court, probably maybe the worst surface for him at the moment. He's had really good results on clay. He was very impressive at Wimbledon against Alcaraz. I see him that he's pretty much maxing out right now, to be quite honest. Maybe a little bit better. He's, that's a very good level. 15 or so in the world, I think, would be a good target for Nicholas Jarry.
So Zverev beat Jarry, plays Medvedev. The other semi-final in Beijing will be Alcaraz, who just beat Casper Ruud, and he will take on the winner of the match currently on court between Jannik Sinner and Grigor Dimitrov. Sinner is serving for the opening set, so we could be on, sorry Dimitrov, but we could be on for Sinner Alcaraz.
I was going to say, you know what I was saying about how so many people recently have won titles for the first time in a long time? Grigor, this is your time.
Oh.
Didn't we have a look the other day that he hasn't won a title since the ATP finals in 2017?
Even longer ago than Karen Khachanov, who broke his duck this week or last week, sometime in the recent past.
Khachanov probably hasn't won a title since we had Matt on for the first time.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, since we were all high on him. Yeah. Won
Zhuhai.
Beat Nishioka in the final. I'm not gonna make you do a what does it mean with Khachanov winning Zhuhai. Don't worry. On. Unless anybody's got thoughts and feelings.
Matt will have takes.
I mean, he was having a very good year, wasn't he, Khachanov, before he got injured? He was semi-final in Australia, quarter-final at Roland Garros, semi-final in Miami, I think, as well. Like, really, he was showing up at a lot of the big events, and then got injured, came back at the US Open, didn't look ready at all, got absolutely rolled by Michael Moe there, and has just won this title pretty convincingly, actually, in... Where was it? Zhuhai. In Zhuhai.
When was it? Where was it?
Yeah.
Who can say?
Who can say?
Some point in the last week or so.
Definitely China, and at some point in the last week. I'm finding the crowd situation tough at these events as well, these Chinese events. I mean, I'm looking here at Dimitrov Sinner. I mean, this is one of the better crowds. It's the last match of the day. And I realise it's partly a stadium design feature, a little bit like the Caja Magica in Madrid. Even when it's fuller, it doesn't look super full because it's a bit sort of boxy and metallic somehow, but it also is not full and hasn't been anywhere close to full all week. Or I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen a full stadium or anything close to, and it's tough, you know. Alcaraz against Musetti yesterday morning, I think that was, maybe the morning before, who knows, time means nothing. You know, Alcaraz wasn't doing any of his playing to the crowd stuff because there was no crowd to play to. And it was all just a bit sort of, it makes such a difference.
Yeah, it does. I did a lot of commentary on this time of year back when BT Sport had the rights to the WTA Tour, and I would do Wuhan and Beijing. And I used to get demoralised, really, because... Yeah, no, there's nothing better than a really invested and loud and into it tennis crowd. And I mean, you know, it was pointed out to me a few times that, look, there are some cultural differences here to maybe what I'm used to, and I should perhaps bear that in mind before throwing my opinions around. And I do accept that. And there's a sort of education, there's a learning about the sport, and there's, you know, being introduced to the sport as well. And because I was thinking, well, you know, why is the WTA Tour so invested in an area where there aren't crowds, you know? And obviously there's a massive financial...
Money.
Yeah, no, obviously there's a massive financial reason for that. And it did kept getting pointed out to me that how do you make a sport grow if you don't go to it and try to introduce? And obviously there's a huge number of people there. But it just doesn't feel over the years. Now, obviously, a pandemic has happened in the meantime. But even in the periods before that, it didn't feel like the progression was as much as you'd want it to be. And I mean, listen, there's, you know, one of our listeners, Lars Graf, is the tournament director in Beijing. And you know, there's a lot of people working incredibly hard to try to make these events as successful as they can. They've got a good field. They've got a huge prize money, all the rest of it. I think... It comes down to the atmosphere, but also, again, it's so late in the year. And, you know, I think it's Mary who sometimes says, shouldn't the tennis tour just really stop after the US Open and have a proper off-season to get re-energized? Because much as I love it, everybody's hanging on. Everybody's hanging on and trying to pump themselves up again, players and... perennial TV watchers, I suppose, because people in the markets, you would hope that they're introduced to the sport for the first time in their year and they go and watch it. Well, okay, maybe not as many as we would like. I am struggling with it compared to other times of the year. There's no question about that. And I do feel that could do it being looked at.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a kind of if you build it, they will come attitude, which can certainly be the case, that can work out, but I'm just not seeing the evidence that it's moving in the right direction, and it's a bit demoralizing, but yeah, fingers crossed for the future. So WTA Beijing has already started. Sabalenka has thrashed Sofia Kenin 1-1. She faces Katie Bolter next. Swiatek has started winning again. She beat Sara Cerebez Tormo. Andreeva, Mira Andreeva, beat Barbora Krejcikova 2-2. And Coco Gauff has won her first match since the US Open. She beat Ekaterina Alexandrova, who can be really tricky, actually. 7-5, 6-3. I think that's good. Good performance, good win from Coco Gauff. ATP Shanghai starts Wednesday.
I was just going to say, a point of note on Iga Swiatek today against Sara Cerebez Tormo. I watched quite a lot of this. She came to the net, Swiatek, 27 times, which,
wow,
for her and kind of for anyone in a pretty straightforward two-set match is a lot. And she wasn't doing that last week, so I don't know whether it was particularly specific to Sarube's Tormo. I have always thought, why don't more people come to the net against her when she's sort of looping the ball up or slicing it, and you really don't want to end up in a long marathon against her. Perhaps it was specific tactics. But she has spoken about, you know, I think no longer being number one, going to number two, almost like there's just a mindset of, right, now I need to improve because I'm no longer the best and I need to work on my game. And I wonder whether, we spoke about it a bit at the US Open, trying to bring back some of that variety that she used to have would be a good play for Świątek to sort of kick on and develop even more as a player. And if that involves a bit more net game, then that would be quite interesting as well. So I'm keen to see whether that continues for Świątek, because yeah, 27 times is an order of magnitude more than you would expect from her.
Taylor Townsend-esque. Last bit of news from the week involves Zheng Xinwen, who won gold at the Asian Games last week. She beat Zhu Lin in the final there, and then announced after that win that her coach, Wim Fissette, is no longer her coach. He's going back to work with Naomi Osaka, who he was coaching before Osaka took a break from the sport. She said, "During the US Open, I knew he had contact with the team of Osaka. Right after the quarterfinal match, he said to me that he felt like he had no connection with me. He never said that to me before." And then a week later, Zheng says, Fissette told her he would be joining Osaka's team. "I cried after hearing that," she said. "There were no fights, no arguments in our collaboration. I thought that was an unethical end to that collaboration. I understand that Osaka can provide a better offer to him. I understand from his perspective this might be a better position. He has a family to support. I understand his decision, but it doesn't mean I will forgive him for making such a decision." I really feel for her here, and I actually think those are incredibly mature quotes, really, sort of understanding why it's an appealing offer for him to go back to working with Osaka, but being devastated by the sounds of things about the way it's all happened and the way she's been treated in this situation. I know it's a bit of a lawless land, isn't it? Coaching arrangements, it's all pretty unregulated and can feel quite informal, and there are a lot of changes, and I'm sure there are a lot of grievances that we don't hear about, but this it doesn't sound great to me, does it? We obviously haven't heard his side of the story. I too can absolutely understand why going back to Naomi Osaka and resuming that arrangement is extremely appealing for him, but this doesn't sound great, does it?
Very, very unusual to have quotes like that on the WTA website, which is where I saw them earlier today. And yeah, very interesting to hear somebody come out and speak as strongly as that. Now, I think they were said to reporters, they were also replicated on the WTA website. I suppose the lawlessness you reference is what an unsecure type of job coaching is as well. That how many coaches bring a player through and then they have a bit of a bad patch and then they're out in the rear. You know, and I think there are some coaches, and maybe Wim Fissette is one, there are certainly others that just think, I'm basically in this for me and I'm gonna maximize. And if that means being a bit of a mercenary and taking whatever you can get, highest offer, best contract, that's what I'm going to do. Because so often, loyalty in inverted commas, either way, isn't necessarily rewarded. And but I do feel for her in this instance. She'd actually made some real strides of late. She'd had that, was it US Open quarterfinal? You know, real progress. And this having come off the back of a pretty fallow period following the initial arrival on the scene and the hype, frankly, from people like us. But she'd sort of started to put it together. She's had this good win at the Asian Games. And I think when you then find somebody you really do like working with and it's going well, it must really be hard to take.
Particularly as she's a 20-year-old girl, 20-year-old young woman, isn't she? I know that, you know, in a business sense, exactly as you describe, it's all pretty cutthroat. People have to make mercenary decisions. I do understand that, but she's a tennis player, you know, and she's 20 years old and no experience of the world. I think it was Matt Futterman that was telling us, Matt Futterman in the New York Times, that was telling us at the US Open a bit of her background and the age at which she was, you know, separated from her parents to commit to tennis. I think she was 7 years old, as I remember, seven or eight, which is not that uncommon a story in tennis. You know, okay, that's extreme, but young players just being sort of abandoned in pursuit of this incredibly ruthless sport that requires crazy sacrifice in order to succeed. Just on a human level, that abandonment and breach of trust for someone so young is quite traumatic, I think. And as much as on a business level, I understand it from Wim Fossette, there's such a deficit of experience, world life experience there. It feels, I don't know, it feels so uncomfortable to me. And I think that's why regulation has to come in, right? Regulation of some sort, I don't know what it would look like, but has to acknowledge that deficit somehow. That, as ever, with so many of these situations regarding coaching in the WTA, I'm just so acutely aware all the time that it's young women and older men, and that informs everything about those dynamics. And I don't personally think that's accounted for enough in any situation. So I really wish her well, and I wish Wim Fossette well with Naomi Osaka. No, nobody wants that to go well more than me. I mean, I'm there's another part of me that's really excited that they're getting the band back together, and at the prospect of a hungry Naomi Osaka picking up where she left off before, that's fantastic. But yeah, it's a tough one.
Just one other story that I saw came out of the Asian Games, and I'm not fully aware of all the details of this, but Sunwoo Kwon of South Korea was apparently absolutely devastated not to win his match, and not to win the tournament. In fact, there is a thing in South Korea where if you win an Asian Games gold medal, I believe it would have counted if it was in singles or in doubles, it would have got him out of mandatory military service. But because he didn't win, it sounds like he is going to have to do 18 months of military service. Now, I don't know whether he gets another chance next year. I must say, I don't know all the details there. But I do see a lot of headlines. Remember it being a big deal last year with Son, the Tottenham Hotspur player, that I believe they won, and that got him out of that. I think some of the golfers on the PGA Tour, Sung Jae-im and Siwoo Kim, have just won medals, and it's made them exempt from military service. But I think Sunwoo Kwon, and I'm sure other South Korean players as well, but he's the most high profile one, was sort of aiming to use those Asian Games as a way of you know, being able to continue his tennis career. And it sounds like he is going to have to do that military service. So as I said, I don't know all the details there, but that was one of the stories that I saw reported out of that event.
Wow, talk about high stakes.
Mm.
The gold was in the men's was won by Zheng Zhijian.
Yes,
wasn't it?
Of China.
Another player that I'm always saying he's really good. I do think he's really good.
Mm.
Our mascot for this week is Luna. Luna is owned by Richard Nuttall. She is an 11-year-old black Labrador, and she is a returning mascot. Richard says she's very pleased to be a mascot again. Since last time, her quiet life has been upset by the arrival of two kittens, Mason and Leo. that have very rudely affected her quiet life here in Uxbridge, London. Inter-animal friendships are my favourite thing.
But are they friends? That's the big question.
Well,
they might not be.
Let us know, Richard. Let us know. Oh, when dogs and cats like share a basket together, it melts me. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. Pretty sure we didn't get points, Xenia, but maybe whoever we picked hasn't even played yet, or maybe they've won a title, or maybe both.
I can inform you that the only reason you haven't got points yet is because the tournament hasn't finished.
Oh, I went for Medvedev, didn't I? So I could still get points.
Oh. What did I go for? Okay. I went for Azarenka, didn't I? That definitely didn't work out.
Sorry to Maisie for that. Matt and Darwin?
No, bad.
How did you
bad,
fare? Bad. Okay. Billie Jean is always winning at life. She is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers on three. They are 3, 2, 1, Jamie, Hannah, and Drew.
And I got a lovely gift from Jamie. And it was a beautiful beer glass. And I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Jamie for that.
Love that. Thank you, Jamie. And thank you to Hannah and Drew as well. Shout outs today, Matt. Who have we got?
We have Juno Chaser in California.
Oh, hello, Juno.
What a cool name.
Juno's a Roman god?
Goddess?
Goddess, yeah.
Yeah, Roman.
Yeah.
And a film.
The protector and special counsellor of the state. She was equated to Hera, queen of the gods, in Greek mythology. Yes, film. Good film. Juno's from California?
Yes, Pacifica, California, to be specific.
It sounds lovely. Mm.
Thanks, Juno.
Thank you, Juno.
We've also got a shout out for Marisol and Lydia in New Jersey.
All right, Marisol and Lydia.
So many listeners in New Jersey.
Mm.
Hello, Marisol and Lydia. Did you see the pictures this week of Bruce Springsteen just out and about in a diner in Freehold?
Yes. Yeah. Looking well, which is good.
Looking very well.
The important
thing. All your faves are out and about, aren't they?
Marisol and...
Lydia.
Lydia, if you see Bruce out and about, do send him our best.
Taylor Swift can't get away from NFL games.
No, my journey of getting into the NFL seems to have coincided completely by accident with Taylor Swift's journey of trying to get into the NFL. It's the most serendipitous thing that has ever happened, David.
Maybe she'd heard about you.
Marvellous turn of events.
Must be something to it.
I got there first. Well, the timeline's muddy. Who knows who got there first? Final shout out, Matt.
she seems a bit more into it than you.
But you haven't seen me in my living room. I was watching at 3 a.m. last night. I know. I understand the rules now, and it turns out really helps one's level of interest if you understand what's going on.
Mm.
Final shout out, Matt.
Final shout out comes from Tracy Collins, and he's dedicating it to his partner Carrie Collins.
Oh, that's lovely.
Tracy says, Tracy. "Well, if you think that's lovely, listen to this." Tracy says, "Carrie was my prom date, and we reconnected 40 years later, and we're now married."
Oh, how lovely.
Whoa. Pretty keen to hear what happened in the intervening 40 years, Tracy.
That's so cool.
They are in Cincinnati.
Been to Cincinnati.
Yeah. Home of the tournament. Let's hope for your sake it's still there many years from now with Charlotte trying its best to nick it.
I'm not sure it is going to be, David, so let's... Cincinnati. Well, it's not actually home of the tournament, is it?
No.
It's Mason.
Home of the Bengals.
Mm.
You knew that.
I knew that. me and Taylor Swift both knew that. Right. I think that's it for this week. We'll be back in a week when some tournaments will be finished, some won't, some will be just starting, some will be at the sort of quarterfinal stage. We can't wait, folks. I know I'm being down on this part of the tennis season, but sometimes these are our favourite pods, aren't they? When tennis is all a bit weird. So thank you for coming on this journey with us in the final portion of the tennis season. It is always a pleasure to talk to you every week. And we'll be back with another one of these in a week's time. We'll speak to you then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.